to another episode of the LED Cast, brought to you by MesoPartner. MesoPartner is an international consultancy firm that generates and disseminates knowledge in the field of territorial development. For more information on this and other episodes, visit mesopartner.com and click on the LED Cast button. This is the second interview with Natasha Walker on facilitation. Let's go straight over to the interview. Okay, so we've shared some frustrations and we've also offered some practical advice on how to make it not so bad. Let's look at some cool tips and tricks. And I actually want you to start with one of the facilitation trainings that we did together where you came in a very different way. Why don't you just quickly paint a picture?
Well, I hope it doesn't sound very untoward, but I think what you're talking about is that I like to come into a situation, a new group, a new set of expectations, and create or pull down barriers that might otherwise be set up. So what I like to do is not be the teacher standing at the front waiting for her pupils to come in and sit down.
Yeah, next to the flip chart.
Yes. But I think what you're talking about is basically going down to floor level, and I think the situation we had, just putting pictures on the floor, using the floor again as the visualization surface, and making it very clear from the beginning, this is your show. I'm the guy putting the pictures on the floor. I'm the guy doing the writing. You're the people for the thoughts. And this start situation, what's happening in those first 3 minutes, I think is vital to set up the relationship between facilitator and participants. Namely, this is your show. These are your ideas. You're making the decision. And also bringing the whole people, each individual person, into the group and into the topic. And I like doing that with pictures. I will do it also with other objects. And just ask people, for example, which of these pictures will help you to tell us your experience of the topic that we have at large? Or, just to take another example, inviting people working in a department together who know each other to pick a tool out of a tool case, a hammer, a saw, a pair of pliers, whatever's in there, and say, now how am I going to use this tool to help put our department back on track?
They've all been using hammers all along. Okay, but let me create a more vivid picture here. Okay, so Natasha and I'm facilitating. I'm actually the co-facilitator. And Natasha's saying, I'm going to get the people to transfer in. And, you know, so I'm standing more or less there in the front ready. And she comes in with, and she goes and she sits down on the floor between about 25 experts who are there to be trained to become expert facilitators. And she sits down on the floor and she starts packing out these laminated A4 pictures on the floor. And everybody is a little bit surprised by this move, but they're all leaning forward to see what you are doing.
So they're involved.
It wasn't you walked up to the front and you tapped on the flip chart and say, this is what we are here for. It was very different from what I think a lot of people expected.
Well, I think the word expectation is very important. I make it, and this is a real important trick and tip from me, it's very important never to ask people what their expectations are.
Because you set yourself up for huge, huge failure.
Well, if as soon as you say to someone, what's your expectation? He holds his hand out. He says, well, I expect you to give me this, 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 and this. Mm. I talk about hopes. I talk about hopes and fears. As soon as someone has to say what he hopes he will get out of a workshop, he has to play a role.
Okay, that's interesting.
What about you?
Well, something that I've been doing recently is, I use several flip charts or panels in front of the room, and I try to record different things on different panels. So I would have, of course you have the usual parking bay where you can park ideas that's outside of the discussion or that's perhaps not on this agenda or that deserves a complete meeting on its own. So I have a parking bay. But generally, I would also have two or three or maybe even four other panels ready so that if I want to make insights, that I can record insights. And if I want to record actions, that I can record actions or decisions. And that I don't have to flip backwards and forwards and say, oh, okay, three pages ago we had a decision. But to have a panel up that says decisions, and that people can actually, as the discussion unfolds, no matter where in the discussion we are, we can record decisions and actions. So even if we start asking with what are your hopes, you know, or why did you come here, and something can be concluded from that. So we can say, okay, it's obvious from what's been expressed that we really emphasize that today. That we say, and that is a decision. Do you agree with that? And let's record it on the flip chart that says decisions made.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps. I mean, of course, it's fantastic for me to do my documentation afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's very nice for the people to, in the workshop, see, well, we're going to actually not just talk. We're going to make decisions and we're going to develop actions.
And it also helps you as facilitator not to have to go back and discuss things that have already been discussed and decided on.
Well, and I mean, the point is that when I facilitate, I get really drawn into the people. So when I turn back to my flip chart to just check where am I, and it's 3 pages ago, then I do get lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing worse than going through your four flip charts trying to figure out, now, where was that point made again? Was it made or did I just dream about it?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to make one other point, which I think is very important. When you have inputs from experts, from speakers, they will tend to have a presentation.
Mm.
Often a PowerPoint or something like that. Now, you may have provided the PowerPoint for the participants, you may not have. I think it's very important, and this is our job, that we write down, we visualize, as the input is being made, the 3-4 main messages that have come out of the input.
Okay.
Because we want the input to be a sort of impulse for the further discussions that the participants are doing. And a 30-minute input statement is going to have been so complex that it's no longer going to be retained in people's brains. So I think it's also our responsibility not just to allow clever people to talk for 30 minutes and hope that our participants have understood the main thrust of what was being said, but that we know what the input is going to be saying, and we note down on a flip chart or wherever else we're visualizing the 3-4 main points, and we can draw that in, and it's much better for the flow of the discussion.
Well, I mean, that's not when inputs are coming in, but maybe also to say that we also visualize the whole process of the workshop so that
mm-hmm.
we can say, okay, we've reached the phase where where the next question is, say, very obvious. Let's just see. We started off here. We looked at that, and you can actually point and say, look, there's our record. This is how we've come, and that's how we've arrived at
mm-hmm.
this very important point. And if you then combine your advice with my advice, then you would also be able to say, and this far we've made the following decisions, and we've agreed on the following actions, so let's go into the next important issue. And so you can, your visualization is also about keeping record of the evolution of the discussion.
Yes.
It's not just about capturing the end conclusion of the workshop. So the workshop concluded,
mm-hmm.
point 1, 2, and 3, but being able to say, well, the process of getting to that conclusion is as important.
The group's logic.
The group's logic is as important as the conclusion. So you can't just capture the conclusion. Well, we agreed we have to work together, and we're going to do the following 3 things.
Now, Sean, you're a funny person. You like making jokes.
Yes, I'm often in trouble about that.
Well, what role does humour have in facilitation?
Well, I mean, I must start off by saying that I sometimes can't help it, and that I do even surprise myself. No, I think for me, the humor is a way of breaching really sensitive topics. So you can sometimes, I mean, but not by being insensitive, but you can sometimes, by using a little bit of humor, you can make a really tense subject or a really serious thing. I'll give an example. I very often work with red tape in government or in the private sector, and red tape is very often associated with corruption. So if you're running a workshop with a bunch of public officials and you start referring to red tape and how it could lead to corruption, some of your participants might actually be offended by your approach. So if you use a little bit of humor and you say, well, it could just be in that imaginary place that people are behaving in this way, and you could create a bit of a picture, or you use a funny example, that people are actually a little bit more relaxed about engaging with the topic. So they're not sitting there thinking, did he just mean me? Mm. Or is he referring to my department or my organization? So humor is something that I use very often, and it's my way of dealing with sensitive or stressful situations.
So it allows you to name things that otherwise you would perhaps have to keep under the carpet.
Yes, or that you would need to almost mediate more than you would facilitate, where you have to make sure that, you know, there's fair play and legitimacy and means of dealing with conflict and all of that.
And I think it's very important. You can laugh about things, but not about people.
That's very important, is that if some... I mean, there's humor and there's humor. So you could use humor to create an environment where people feel more safe to make mistakes even. But then there's also just fooling about. And fooling about is not good.
Okay. I mean, one example that I have, we learned this from Americans that we worked with, is, for example, when you're working out who's there, who's in the group, which is, again, something that you're doing at the start of a facilitation, a very vital element, is to ask, for example, how old are you? Are you under 25? Are you 26 to 40? Are you 41 to 60? Or are you 60 or better? 60 and better. So just using words like that that bring a light-hearted touch,
yes,
into a question of age, for example. This is it's a sensitive issue.
Yes. Yeah.
And then perhaps when people put their hands up after they've said they're 60 and better, just saying, put your hands down quickly, someone's watching. So bringing in something like that, a humour, and then adding, on a very serious note, this just goes to show what a wealth of experience we have in the room.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we didn't make that statement to joke with the people, but we actually made that statement to actually show how diverse we are, something like
that. Yeah, or the value of the diversity that we have, yeah.
But you're also quite a funny person. Do you laugh a lot in your workshops?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, I do. I enjoy them. And I think I'm often slightly tense or even nervous before an important facilitation.
No.
Well, I know you are as well. And I think it's important. If it was every day, then we'd probably be very boring facilitators. But at the end of the day, I know that it's going to be a rewarding experience for me too. It's going to be a learning experience for me too. So I'm going into it and I'm enjoying it. And I hope that at the end of the day, we will also have had an enjoyable experience. Mm. We will have laughed. We'll have laughed together. I think one thing that's not usually very funny is irony. Now, I like ironic humour. I love British humour. Don't get me wrong. But I think in the situation of a facilitation where you have a group and you have a facilitator and we're not part of that group, if we start being ironic, then we will easily lead to a series of misunderstandings which can cause a breakup of the process.
Well, and I think that irony, you also use, in irony, you often belittle some people. You make them smaller, or you accentuate something, and people might take offense because they might actually seriously believe that. So it's also about being very respectful. I think that, for me, I like it if people say you're a very joyful or a very passionate facilitator, mm-hmm. so they can see that I'm really engaged with them. I'm not busy planning my report.
I'm on the telephone.
Yes, I'm really engaging with them, mm-hmm. and I'm taking their topic seriously. So even if we do laugh and we do smile, then it's still about being deadly serious about the topic, mm-hmm. even if we use a fun way or creative way to engage with it.
And I think you have to remember, as facilitator, you are always on show. So when you're making a joke, when you're bringing humour in, just as much as when you're being serious and passionate about something that you're talking about, show it in your mimicry. Show it in the way that you look people in the face, in their eyes. Mm-hmm. Don't tell a joke. Don't tell people, on the other hand, that you're very passionate about something, and show with your whole body language that you'd actually prefer to be lying by the pool having a barbecue.
But you've just used the word joke. Now, that's something that I don't do. I try not to, at least. Maybe it slipped out once or twice, but tell jokes. Now, earlier in our discussion, you said you should be very careful about judging these so-called difficult participants. So your co-facilitator comes to you and say, oh, be careful of that Mr. So-and-so sitting in the corner there. He's a real pain in the backside. Or be careful of that little group over there, because they are actually the leadership in waiting. They're waiting to take over the show. How do you deal with these people?
Well, to be honest, I, as I said before, I try not to take any notice of that sort of prejudice. In a way, it's prejudice. But, I mean, we do have situations, and sure, it'll make my arms go a bit wobbly when I'm just about to say, okay, we're going on to our next session. There are 50 people in my group, and two of them say, hold on, this is all going completely the wrong way.
Now, you mean you don't run away then?
Well, usually I won't get paid if I do that.
You're in for the money.
No, I don't run away, because that's exactly what we want. If we consider our role as facilitators to be like a sort of midwife. Now, we're concerned in our group having lots of babies. And if one of those babies happens to be one that's crying...
This is just an example.
And that's saying, I'm not happy about this, then it's our job to take that baby just as seriously and to love it just as much as the other babies that are saying, Google, Google, we love it here. So I think it's very, very important that we, in our role as facilitator, don't get annoyed by someone who wants to do something other than we've planned doing, but to take that very, very seriously. Make sure you and the rest of the group understand exactly what it is that this person wants or doesn't want and why. Mm-hmm. And then adjust your way of thinking, adjust your process to incorporate this person and his criticism or his needs just as much. And the interesting thing is, you'll find there are two sorts of people, is my experience, who will criticize the process. One of them, and this is the majority, really does have a need that the process is not satisfying. And this will harm your results if you don't deal with that.
What do you mean, that they don't actually want your process to reach its completion?
No. The majority of people do, but they just need to go at it a little bit differently in order to get there. Mm-hmm. By taking them seriously, I will improve the process and I will ensure that I get to my goals. Mm-hmm. Now, if I take them seriously, then my process is going to work. There are a couple of other people who maybe are boycotting the process for whatever reasons they have. But if I take them seriously and their criticisms, and I incorporate them into the process, and I give them I share the responsibility of getting to the results with them, then if they have not really been serious, they will no longer boycott the process.
So they have a condition, and they have a condition that says, hear me out. Mm-hmm. And you are saying that if you do take them into consideration, if you do take them very serious, and you do hear them out, that they will then, from there on, continue. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know a lot of people that would probably just run away from the very difficult people. I mean, I remember once facilitating a workshop with Jörg, and there was one specific participant that I was very afraid of, because I read his articles and I knew his opinions. And Jörg had to at one point turn to me and say, Sean, don't you want to join me in front here, in front of the group? So I was really just, my first response was to just hide from this very difficult participant who turned out to actually be a really reasonable person.
I was just going to say, don't you find that those are the people who will really help support the process? Don't you find that if you show that you trust these person to deliver a constructive role, that they will actually be one of the pillars that you can really rely on?
Well, I think that what happened in that specific instance was that because of the method that we used cards, so we allowed everybody to communicate. And so he could express his feelings, he could express his concerns the whole time. So we would make a presentation and then he could engage. So he could say, well, I agree with that and I disagree with that. And you know, I think as humans, we all have a lot in common. And then we do have things that we do not agree on. So we should always search for what is the common ground, and then what are the things where we are unique on, where we are very have a unique position. Let's not use the word disagree. Mm. Let's just say that those people, they look at this, and you know, very often some of these people have very valid grounds. They look at it from a different angle. They're saying, what you are trying to do now is you're trying to solve a very simple problem that's part of a much bigger, more complicated problem. So they're looking at the big picture and they're saying, well, we shouldn't be discussing the performance of our firm or our organization within this broader concept. And you have to allow them to express their perspective, how they're seeing the thing. And then say, okay, let's Let's keep that in mind. Let's actually write them down. Serious. Let's take it very serious. But do you agree that if you look at it from this angle, that there's merits in taking a look at this? And in most cases, they would say, no, I agree with you, as long as we're going to get there as well.
I think it's important also to make sure that as soon as you've heard this person, that you involve the rest of the group. Mm-hmm. That you don't create a sort of, it's me and him and the rest of the group is just spectating a situation. Yeah. But that you hear the person out, you offer perhaps a process solution, but then you ask the rest of the group how they stand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'll find that the group will solve any kind of problem amongst itself if you just allow enough people to regulate themselves.
Mm-hmm. But within, I think there's a difference, though, within organizations. Because in organizations, when there's a so-called difficult participant, a lot of people know what their position is, but they don't understand why or what exactly their perspective is. I mean, they would have theories about the why. That person is being difficult because he was overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
Or that person is difficult because, you know, he didn't get his way or her way. But they don't actually understand the perspective that they are taking on the system or on the process. So allowing these people to bring it in is very important.
Mm.
Okay, so let's wrap up our discussion on facilitation by just making a few closing remarks. Anything from your side?
Well, I think one thing that we as facilitators, in fact, we as human beings are often scared of is conflict. And I think it's our duty and our role as facilitators not to avoid conflict. If we're going to do justice to our complex issues and reach really sustainable results, then we are going to have conflict. And we're going to have to invite in that conflict. And I think it's very important for us to be able to stand our ground, to understand that conflict is necessary, and to see our role as holding up a mirror to our participants to say, look, I'm a mirror. I'm not part of this conflict, but what I'm seeing is. And separating the mirror for the emotional conflict and the mirror for the conflict surrounding the how are we getting to results, what are our interests, what are our positions. And giving the responsibility for solving the conflict back to the participants, but not avoiding it at all costs.
But also not causing it.
Not causing it and not being part of it. But not avoiding it.
I think that from my side, just a closing remark is that in facilitation, I've started describing facilitation to myself. I've been saying it's about allowing people to have a richer discussion, to explore a topic. And I was really, up to quite recently, very afraid of conflict and tension. But if you think about it, if we say to people, let's explore a topic, but let's only explore the nice parts of the topic, then that's also being a bit hypocritical. It's actually being false. So if we say to people, let's really explore this topic, let's really analyze this thing, let's really form our priorities, or let's look at that, then if we really get to the off the beaten track, there's bound to be tension and disagreement, even if it's not conflict as in people screaming at each other, but just simply people saying, well, but your priorities should be that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's value based. It's your priorities should be that, or if you're serious about that, then that will be your, and even that could be a disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I've now learned that if I really want people to explore a topic and really engage a topic, then I must be ready that tension is going to arise and that conflict is going to arise, and that you cannot, as the facilitator, hold up the mirror and say, oh, look at you, there's nothing wrong. You're all in agreement. When you know that underneath the surface, there's a disagreement, perhaps even a fundamental disagreement about what must be done and why.
I mean, there are consequences of that. There could be the consequence that you pose the question, are we able to solve this conflict here in the time that we've got, with the group of people that are here, with the mandate that we've got? And you may come to the conclusion that, no, we can't. So I think it's also important to see facilitation not as some sort of magic process that will solve every conflict.
Yeah, there was meeting version one and now there's facilitation versus version two.
Yes, but as something which is holding up a very true and a very realistic mirror.
Okay, so Natasha, how do we get hold of you?
Well, my mobile number. drop me a line at natasha.walker@ifok.de. Or you can visit the website on www.ifok.de.
Okay, and thank you very much. And we ask all of our listeners to please send us their comments and their ideas for further shows. And I hope that I'll have you on a show again soon.
Yes, thank you very much. I look forward to your comments.